I turned to the man behind me in the queue and said, "Are you sure you really want to do this?" He drew in his breath and said, "I have no choice." I slowly tilted my head and lowered my voice. "You only have a pint of milk, it's no problem." With more conviction, I hissed, "There is another way to deal with these people, but not now, not like this. Turn now and run, I'll find you." It was a strange choice, but I felt compelled, despite his intolerance to dairy and shopkeepers. I was shocked at the response. In a barely audible voice, the man muttered, "I've tried every other option. This is all that's left to me." Like a desperate man forced to squeeze a ridiculously small amount of UHT into a Premier Inn coffee, and knowing that he'd regret it within moments of it touching his lips, he did exactly that. He turned and ran. But first, he pressed a card into my hand that read, "In case of emergency, Charing Cross, locker number 237. "Quick, take this and hide it for me. My life depends upon it," he begged. I took the small package and swiftly placed it in my pocket. My hand crept slowly to cover my now slightly bulging pocket, and my eyes darted around almost manically, seeking out anyone who may have seen the exchange. "Stop being so paranoid," the little annoying voice screamed from within my head. But was it paranoia? Could this conspiracy that was against me be true? Maybe, just maybe, I wasn't going mad. Madness or radiation poisoning? My head was spinning. Suddenly, slowly, the package started ticking. Tick, tick, tick. I unwrapped the twined brown paper and opened the box to investigate. To my relief, sunk into foam was an elaborately engraved pocket watch. However, when I picked up the watch, I had strange visions, ones I couldn't explain. I dropped the watch from shock. What could these visions be, I thought. It was only then that I saw the strange inscription on the back of the watch. It read, "Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious." With quivering lips and sweaty palms, I silently debated whether to utter the strange chant out loud. I thought and thought. This wasn't my watch. This is private. But I couldn't resist. With tension inside me mounting, my heart racing faster than a car driven by Stirling Moss around Brand's Hatch, and barely audible to even the most sensitive ears, I uttered the mysterious word, "Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious." What happened next would be written into the history books. As if anyone would ever believe me, I was suddenly transported to a year that wasn't this one. I was in a yesteryear town, and everyone was wearing trilby hats. Even the female of the species wore trilby hats. I looked at the watch, and the hands were whizzing round and round. Where was I? What was I going to find in this strange land? Chapter 2. Charing Cross was a little different back then. With nothing more to go on than the note about the locker, I decided to try to find it. I'd been spotted. I almost panicked until the guard said, "Hello, are you Frank Sinatra?" Phew, mistaken identity, I thought. I laughed and said, "If I was old Blue Eyes, I'd be wearing a fedora hat, not this tatty trilby." Now I had his attention, I could ask him, "Could you point me in the direction of the shower room lockers, please? I need to find number 237. My sweaty palm unfurled to reveal the now clammy key.
"Locker 237. Walk straight ahead until you see the steam room. Turn right. It's the last on the right," said the man.
My heart thumped in my chest. I was soon to find what my father had hidden, that was for my eyes only. As I neared locker 237, I spotted a figure in a long hooded cape using an implement which wasn't a key. He was trying to force open the locker. Who was this person, and what was he looking for? My first instinct was to question the man in the hood until I got a better look at his face.
"What are you doing?"
I shouted. The man turned round. His face did look familiar.
"Hi, Dom. What are you up to?" I asked.
"Nothing,"
said Dom, but he looked suspicious. It was then that I noticed what he had been using to pry open the locker. I stared, shocked at the item in his hand. It was a McDonald's French fry.
"Listen," I said, "if you want tomato ketchup that desperately, I'll buy you a bottle."
Chapter 3. Dom woke up, wiping the dribble from the side of his face. He'd fallen asleep on the floor of a strange room. The ketchup was still in his hand, but the French fry was nowhere to be seen. He looked at the cat that was suspiciously cleaning his whiskers. A knife stained with red lay in the doorway to the shower room, and he heard the sound of running water, and became aware he'd left the bath running for several hours. He rushed to the bathroom to turn off the taps, and at that moment realized what had been happening.